As we just stated, gambling is a growing problem in our society. And it is to the credit of citizens of the state of Missouri that they defeated its spread in this state just recently. I was watching that race, that question, very intently, and dealt with the topic at home that time, just so that we would all be continually reminded of the issues that come up with these questions. Currently, if you look into society, you'll find there are five major forms of gambling that are present in our society, and probably all the things about gambling could fit into one of these. There are the state-run lotteries. There are the casinos and racetracks, which I'll lump together. There is internet gambling, which is probably being unnoticed by a lot of people, but it is growing by leaps and bounds. There is illegal gambling, which we sometimes do not consider. And then there is private gambling. And unless you work around people that are of that desire to do those things, then these are probably things that you're not aware of just how prevalent they are in our society. But before I became a gospel preacher, I worked in an industry in Oklahoma where it seemed that I was probably the only one there that wasn't interested in gambling about just about any little thing that might happen that day. I've witnessed people drawing a circle on the ground and wagering hard money to with themselves to find out when 10 drops of water would appear in that circle before the day was over. Just silly little things like that. There are a lot of people in the world that are interested in doing even on this level. One of the newest forms of gambling that has come on the scene is the state-run lotteries. In the last 20 years or so, these have grown, and just most of the states in our country have these today. But a recent poll revealed that 57% of the people that answered that poll said that they had bought a lottery ticket in the last year. That's nearly two-thirds. And so it is, this one form of gambling is that prevalent in our society. Now, Webster defines gambling as playing a game of chance for money or prizes, to take a risk in order to gain some advantage, to wager or to place bets. And I was talking to some of the fellows here before the lesson a few moments ago, just indicating that it gets into our language. I have never gambled, but it was at one time a part of the phraseology of the language that I use. It probably, like many of us, we would say, well, I bet such and such. And I had that phrase in my mind and used it in conversation, and I was using it in the pulpit when I first began preaching, until some wise elders advised me to try to overcome the use of that phrase, at least in the pulpit, and I trust that I've done that. But it can get into our lives so easily if we're not aware of that. And we need to be careful that even in not thinking about it, we are supporting it in some way. But gambling involves the attempt to get something for nothing. And by nothing, I mean without providing any product or service in return for what we are wagering in that deal. Someone has once said that gambling is stealing by consent. And if you think about that statement for a while, I believe you too will come to agree that that's pretty much what it is. Nobody that gambles that I have ever met wants to lose, but they agree to lose if the winner turns out to be somebody else. And in another way of saying it, that is stealing by consent. Gambling is really not too difficult to understand and identify a practice as being that if you understand that all gambling has basically three elements within it. There's first of all the element of taking a risk. Taking a risk. That is, the one who gambles places money or property at risk of being lost in the wager, in the playing of that game. There is a risk involved. The second element is that gambling involves the possibility of receiving a prize. That prize may be money or it may be property, but this is put up by those who play whatever game this is. And this brings us to the third element of gambling, and that is that there's an element of chance in it. There's a risk, there's a prize, and there's an element of chance. And this chance is crucial to gambling. It is the random act of chance that determines who the winner is going to be in whatever the game is. And this can be accomplished in an endless number of ways. It can be determined by the cut of a deck of cards, or the flip of a coin, or the roll of dice, or matching numbers, or guessing who's going to win some contest. That's totally not even associated with you. But these are some of the ways in which this is done. And for an activity to be gambling, all three of these elements must be present. And we ought to examine the activities that we do to be sure that what we're doing is not under this headline of what gambling actually is. Gambling can take a host of forms. And in fact, those who promote it are constantly searching for new ways to do that. Gambling can take the form of betting on sports or elections. We've got those coming up always in our society. Raffles or sweepstakes where chances are bought. Card games such as poker where wagers are placed. Slot machines, lotteries. I was a citizen of a small, very small town in southern Missouri before I moved to Kansas. And they were not even an incorporated town. They did not have official councilmen or aldermen, I believe they're called in Missouri. But I was a part for a few months of a committee that met together to plan city events. And I remember that they were at one time planning on a holiday to create for that town. And they were doing that, and I believe this was the second year that that was being done. But another activity that they were planning to do this second year was to have a contest in which they were going to pin up a cow in a fence, I think 100 feet by 100 feet, and mark off the squares in that fence. And they were going to take, you could buy a chance for, I think, $10 and pick one of those squares into what square you thought the cow was going to do its business first. And I just sat back and did not participate in the discussion of that event that they were planning. And they had talked it out, and finally one lady on the other side of the room said, "Well, we need to think of a way to describe this to the town where they don't think they're gambling." And that's when I chose to speak up. I said, "You can't do that." She said, "Why not?" "Because it is. Because it is." They recognized what it was, but they did not want others to see that that's what they were planning for the town to do. We have to keep in mind, though, that gambling is not dependent upon the amount of the wager that one makes. It is the principle of the activity that makes it gambling. Stealing is still stealing, even if only a few pennies are taken. And gambling is still gambling, even if only a few dollars are the amount of the wager. And I know some preaching brethren who need to understand that. I remember as a small boy in Oklahoma hearing a preacher say that it isn't gambling if you don't care about losing the amount of your wager. I disagreed with him then as a boy, and I still do. It's the principle that makes it wrong, not the amount of the wager. So from as far back as the Babylonian Empire, gambling has been a part of society, and it has been a plague on that society. Now, evidently, it wasn't a very big problem among God's people, because the Bible does not specifically mention this topic. But the fact that it doesn't actually say you shall not gamble has led some people to believe that God doesn't care if we do. But I hope by the end of this lesson that you'll see that that idea is false. There are others who feel that since all of life has its elements of risk within it, that it can't be wrong to gamble. But there is a definite difference in gambling, as we have defined it, and engaging in legitimate activities such as farming or investing, even though those activities also involve risk. While I was preaching in Missouri for several years, I worked with two members of the church, one who had an apple orchard and one who had a peach orchard. And I was told by the man who had the peach orchard that I only get a good crop 1 year out of three. And so he got smaller crops those other years because of the weather in that part of the country. So it was a risk as to just how much you could make. But it wasn't gambling, because in farming or in any kind of produce production like this, you are creating food that people need to live on. And in investing, we are creating capital that other businesses use, that our society runs on. Business itself is not gambling. There is a business of gambling, but legitimate business is not under this definition of what gambling is. Now, I want to address this topic in basically two ways. First of all, I want to show you why I believe it to be a sin, even though the Bible doesn't mention it. I believe it is a sin because it violates principles in God's Word. And then next, we will look at how it can be harmful to so many. First of all, gambling is a sin because it is motivated by covetousness. It is motivated by covetousness. I know there are people who say, well, that's not my motivation for it. But I think that if they would examine themselves very carefully, they'll find that there is some of that in their motivation. Covetousness is the desire to possess what belongs to someone else. And it has always been a sin. The Bible reveals this as one of the first sins in the pages of God's Word. Back in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 17, in the 10th commandment that God gave to the nation of Israel, He said, "Thou shalt not covet." He lists things there. Not covet your neighbor's house, or your neighbor's wife, or manservant, or maidservant, nor ox, nor ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Now that's very plain language. And it is there in that commandment. And people remember the Ten Commandments today. They know what's in them. And here is this statement. But the Bible also condemns this covetousness in the New Testament. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 5, Paul writes that you know that no covetous man hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. I just eliminate all the part that doesn't apply to that. But covetousness is listed there among other things, that one who is covetous has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. What could be more plain than that? Covetousness is a sin. I believe it is a secret sin in many people's lives. For in all my life of nearly a half a century, I have yet to hear of anyone confessing, "I am a covetous person." Be they Christian or not, I have not heard of anybody confessing to that sin. But I do believe it is prevalent in society. Undoubtedly, it was covetousness that was part of the sin of Ananias and Sapphira, who lied to Peter and to God concerning the amount of money that they made from the sale of their property, and brought a portion of that money and laid it at the apostles' feet. They lied about the amount of money for which the property was sold. Why would they do that? I believe there was an element of covetousness in that. Coveting the money that they had made from that, coveting the glory that they thought might have been theirs if they taught people that what all they had sold it for was being offered. Gambling involves the desire to obtain what others have, money being the chief possession, probably what is sought after most. But if the money were removed from the games that are played to gamble, do you think they would still play those games? I don't. I believe money is the chief reason for the playing of those games. It is what makes it exciting to those people that desire to gamble. Remove the money, and the lure of the activity is gone. It is this lure to win money that draws people to the casinos and to the stores to buy lottery tickets. If you observe the advertisements that the gambling industry uses to draw people to play these games, they're talking about how you can become an instant millionaire. Now, most of us will never experience that title applied to ourselves, but we like to dream about that, don't we? And that's what the advertisers of those who participate in gambling want us to do. They want us to dream about a life of ease and luxury and travel, and that's what they depict in these ads. People doing just that. But they say that it's so easy to just play the game, and you too can have a chance of winning the jackpot. And the higher the jackpots rise, the more people come out to buy those tickets. Not seemingly realizing that the higher the jackpot goes, the higher the odds of winning those jackpots go. But second, gambling is also a sin because it violates God's desire that mankind make his living by productive work. And it has always been this way from the very beginning. In Genesis 3, verses 17 to 19, God said to the very first man, The first man, in the sweat of thy face, thou shalt eat bread. Very clearly stating to him that it was going to be an effort. You're going to have to put out some labor here to have something to eat. And this has been God's desire ever since the creation, that man would work to earn his living. Even before the fall, even before Adam and Eve's sin, it was that way. The work wasn't a punishment for their sin. For before they sinned, God had told them that they were to dress and keep the garden. They had a responsibility there in that very place that provided the food that they needed to live on. So that wasn't a result of their sin. That was given to them before that. If after this, of course, they were expected to work the ground for their food, even though part of the curse was going to make it more difficult to do that. It wasn't impossible, and that is the way that they were to make their living. Paul tells us in Ephesians 4 and verse 28 that let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good. Even if they now in the church at Ephesus had been thieves formerly, now in Christ, Paul says every able-bodied man was to earn an honest living with his own hands. Gambling is not work. It may take effort on part of those who try to get good at it, but it is not the kind of work that God intends for us to do. Number three, gambling is also a sin because it violates God's principle of stewardship. Of stewardship. In Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 30, Jesus tells the parable of the talents. Now there are a number of lessons, good lessons that we can learn from that parable, but among those, this parable teaches us that God is the source of what we have in our possessions on this earth. God is the source of that. It also teaches us that He expects us to use what He has placed within our hands to His glory. And a third lesson that we get from that parable is that there will be, in the end, a day of accountability where we will have to report to God as to exactly how we did use what He gave us in this life. I realize that so many people think that the things that I possess are mine. I own these. My name is on them. I bought them with money that I earned. But a principle that all of us need to understand when it comes to stewardship is that everything in this world belongs to God. It belongs to Him because He made it. He made us. And He lets us use a part of these possessions that belong to Him while we're here. And while we have them in our control, how they are going to be used will be our say-so. But we need never forget that God will require an accounting from us about how we used His property on this earth. Number four, gambling is also a sin because the pleasures that it gives to a few are based upon the suffering of many people. As I researched this subject, one of the things that struck me was the amount, the number of winners versus the number of losers in the various games that are played in gambling. That, too, is very interesting to study and to realize. Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, probably one of the best-known verses in all the Bible, in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. He says, "All things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them." Those are familiar words. We may know them better as whatever you want men to do to you, do to them. Treat them the same way. We call this the golden rule. It is so well known by humanity. But think about it for just a moment. Jesus taught here that we should treat all others just as we want them to treat us. But how can anyone do this while gambling? If you stop and think about the winners and the losers and what's really going on somewhere else that you don't see when you go and buy a ticket or do something, you can't see what's going on in other people's lives. There's no way that one can satisfy the demands of this command while hoping that others will lose their money by chance and it will end up in our pockets. Are you really treating people the way you want them to treat you? But every time they buy a ticket, they're hoping that your money will end up in their pocket. This commandment is just the opposite of the definition of gambling. We cannot participate in that. And everyone who does is disobeying the most simple command in all the Bible, that which we call the golden rule. Number five, gambling is also a sin because Paul speaks in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 3 of those who were without natural affection. Now, in that passage, Paul is listing a number of sins there, sins of the worst kind. In this list, you can find blasphemers, unholy, false accusers, despisers of those that are good, traitors, and lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Terrible things when you think about them. Surely anyone, though, who would want to take the money from some anonymous person and put it in their pocket to satisfy their covetous desires, to me that sounds like a person that is without natural affection. How can we have love for humanity when that is the desire that we're striving to fulfill? Gambling is a sin because of these and many other reasons that we could list. But there's another thing that needs to be understood in this topic, and that is that gambling is harmful to so many people in society. And it seems to me that our politicians, who seem to be rushing towards this as a source of revenue for their governments and the people that they represent, don't seem to care. They just want to look at the top side of this and look at the winners and look at the fun that people have in playing the games. They don't want to see the other side, and the other side is very ugly. Gambling is harmful to the individual who gambles, to his family, and to society as a whole. Let me explain. Gambling, it has a grave effect on the individual's character. Gambling has been shown to affect the person in many harmful ways. For instance, gambling causes one to place undue stress on material things, because that's the whole purpose of gambling in the first place, to increase one's material possessions. In Matthew chapter 13, Jesus tells the story of the soils. In verse 22, he explains what the seed that fell among the thorny ground meant. And he said there that that seed represents those who let the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke out the Word of God to the point that they become unfruitful in His service. Is that not an apt description of one who has gotten overtaken by this activity of gambling? The affairs of this world, the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches. When you think about what is promised by those who advertise gambling, the deceitfulness of riches explains that perfectly. It's hard sometimes for people to realize just what effect gambling can have on their outlook on life. So much attention to money can easily become an obsession, which causes a person to neglect the more important matters in life. And that's usually what happens. I don't believe we can hear an advertisement by the gambling industry where you don't also hear the phone number 1-800-BETS-OFF if you have a problem with gambling. Now, I guess they're required to put that on there, like the cigarette makers are required to put that warning on the side of their product, too. But they realize the danger that's there, and they pay token admission to that. We'll deal with those people in just a moment, though. Paul would add to this, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18, "While we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal. The things which are not seen are eternal." We need to look at the other side of this. Gambling is often the beginning of other problems, too. It promotes psychological instability by encouraging individuals to commit vast sums of money, which they can usually ill afford to lose, towards unreal, improbable odds of winning something in return. And you ought to look at the odds. From what I've read, they're posted on the side of every slot machine, on every ticket, on any part of gambling that legally is available to the one who wants to buy into that. The odds of winning are there. You ought to think about what those odds actually are. But it lives, gambling does, it lives and thrives by consuming the resources of losers. How else could it survive? In fact, its very life depends on the losses of many, many more losers than there are winners. Its best customers have to be losers. They have to be. Eventually, These losers will turn to borrowing money to cover the losses that they have gained. Gambling is also highly addictive. It can even come to control one's life. Back in 1988, the New York Times Magazine reported that about half of the nation's compulsive gamblers eventually resort to crime in order to support their habit. And eventually they will make false insurance claims, write bad checks, embezzle, and steal from family and friends. All of this just to support their habit that has gotten out of control. That same publication states that over 30% of those who are in prison today, or at that time, are compulsive gamblers, and over 50% of them had committed crimes because of their gambling habit. Gerald Fulcher of the Delaware Council on Gambling Problems says that 86% of compulsive gamblers have committed felony crimes while pursuing their addiction. Gamblers not only lose and borrow, but they also strive to hide their losses and borrowing from others. And then in order to try to recover that debt, they will spend, that's right, more time gambling to try to get back what they've lost. Gambling is very harmful to the individual. Gambling is also has an adverse effect upon the gambler's family. And oftentimes this is overlooked. But you can go to Gamblers Anonymous on the web and find information there. There they reveal that 67% of its members, their total household debt is the result of gambling losses. Of their members, two-thirds of their own household debt is there, not because of wise purchases they've made, but because of gambling losses. And that's how far many get before they turn to Gamblers Anonymous. They also state, Gamblers Anonymous does, that 61% of gamblers have reported hitting their own spouses. It is interesting to realize what the reaction of the wives of gamblers was. According to the National Council on Compulsive Gambling, 67% of the wives of compulsive gamblers are harassed by creditors. 61% of the wives of compulsive gamblers become violent toward the gambler. Does this sound like a good, working, functional family? 78% of the wives of compulsive gamblers suffer from insomnia, worried about where this is going to lead and leave their family. And 11% of the wives of compulsive gamblers have attempted suicide. That's not the gambler, that's the wife of gamblers that were members of Gamblers Anonymous. In fact, the suicide rate for spouses of compulsive gamblers is 150 times the national average. The compulsive gamblers are five times as likely to have been married three or more times simply because their wives can't take it. The gambler goes on, marries again, until that wife can't take it, and goes on and finds another wife. And that's the kind of life many of them live. Children of gamblers are also affected by that behavior. Back in the 1970s, Gamblers Anonymous had no teenage members at all. But by 1990, teenagers comprised 20% of the people that came to Gamblers Anonymous to ask for help. 20%. And that was 14 years ago. Even though it is illegal today for teens to gamble, many do find ways to do so. In fact, the casinos of Atlantic City report turning away from their doors 200,000 underage people trying to get into the casinos every year. They turn away 200,000. They went on to report that they have to remove from the floors of those casinos 35,000 underage gamblers. That's how many get in. Perhaps others do not even get noticed. And finally, gambling also adversely affects the society where it exists. And this is something that we're not being told the story about. Gambling siphons money away from the community. It does not provide money for a community. But it takes money away and provides neither a comparable good nor service in its return. According to a study by two Duke University economists, Klotfelter and Cook, who reported in their book Selling Hope, State Lotteries in America, they made the statement that people earning less than $10,000 in annual income buy more lottery tickets than any other income group. The lowest income group, those who can least afford to lose, are those who buy the most. Most lotteries were voted into existence by the offer of the gambling establishments to aid local governments. Some agency, some program of that government, by returning to that government a portion of the revenues of that activity. And oftentimes this promise is made to support education in that jurisdiction. Bill Honig, who's the California public school superintendent, has stated that for California, every $5 that the lottery gives to the education in California, the state takes $4 away. You see, that money that the gambling establishments give in support of government programs, they give it to the state treasuries. And it's up to the representatives in those states to decide whether or not they'll actually use the money for what it was intended. And sometimes they don't. In fact, the state of Florida found out the hard way. When they voted for a lottery, they were told that gambling would pay for the large portion of education in that state. And in reality, 3 to 4% is all that it includes. Organized crime usually gets involved as well in any form of legal gambling that comes up. For instance, in 1986, Sports Illustrated magazine stated that next to illegal drugs, illegal sports gambling was the largest source of income for crime syndicates. In order to protect their interests, the crime syndicates pay off the politicians so that they would keep gambling wide open for themselves. Frank Costello was a mob leader back in the 1950s who told the McClellan Committee that this is what they do, paying off those politicians. Bugsy Siegel even put it in these words. He said, "We don't run for office. We buy the politicians." We need to keep these thoughts in mind when we think about the ill effects of gambling. In conclusion, I'd like to report to you what people who gamble say is their motivation for doing this. And they usually list one of three things. They'll say, first of all, there's the desire for gain. It's human nature to be impatient about wanting to get something that you know is coming to you. We watch for the mailman to arrive at the door. If we know something's coming, we anticipate our birthday arrival, all of these kinds of things. We do not want to wait. We do not want to wait to earn money in the usual way that it takes to do that. Second, there's the desire for excitement, they say. This, too, is human nature. People don't want to be stuck in a rut. They don't want their life to be categorized by the word ordinary. And so they engage in activities that are extreme. That explains this huge rise in things called extreme sports and activities these days. Activities where we place ourselves, even sometimes, the risk of injury. And third, there is the desire for competition. So many of us are not just competitive. We're very competitive. We want to win, and we hate to lose. And if we do lose, we want to try 2 out of 3. Try to get even, don't we? Gambling is like that. In gambling, a man or a woman is putting their money where their mouth is. There's a lot of people in this world who can't let a challenge lie there. They have to pick it up. And they strive to do this, and they think that gambling is the backing up of their belief in their own power or their judgment or their luck, that they can come out the winner. Somehow, if they do win, it justifies their playing the game. But you know, there's another way to understand these motives for gambling. The desire for gain is actually just the desire for covetousness. Gambling's chief motivation is to get rich quick, but it's an illusion. It really is, if you study it. Covetousness has always been a sin. The desire for excitement is really recklessness. It is a poor substitute for the need to feel alive, which a lot of people these days say that that's what I have, this drive for foolish behavior, gambling included. Recklessness with the things of which God has made us stewards over is also a sin. The desire for competition is actually laziness. when you think about it. It's a poor kind of competition that is based on chance, isn't it? If you really want to measure your abilities against somebody, then participate in something that actually measures those abilities. You want to shoot baskets or run a race or something. But a game of chance is laziness, and laziness too is a sin. I hope we can all see the danger to our society in the practice of gambling. We're talking about combating worldliness, and at this hour, each day of the lectureship, the rest of the days, a different topic on this general topic will be presented. Worldliness is a topic that we could have spent the entire day on, but I hope that we can see and be able to explain to others that gambling is not benefiting our society at all. It's certainly not benefiting the individual, and it is not benefiting the cause of God. Thank you for your attention.